I will be going to the game that night.
You will be going to the game that night, and hopefully there will
unless
be a game
for
that night.
Some reason.
They gotta win one.
Yeah.
They need to win one of those things. It is WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM, 855-915-9636, 855-915-9636 is the phone number. When we come back, it is, did you hear all of the other stories that caught our attention this week right here on WMFO Medford?
If you're an economy-minded cook, your knife can be one of your best friends. By learning to use your knife wisely, you can get more value for your food dollar. You can buy a pork rib roast, for example, and cut the meat away from the bone. Then you'll have an elegant boneless pork roast, and there'll still be plenty of meat on the bones to barbecue like spare ribs. This is Sarah Beck, Consumer Meat Specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Okay, gang. So, chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But, just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So, who's gonna do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So, who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag?
It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So, we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Big Picture on WMFO 91.5 Medford. I'm Lisa Nichols with Derek Gary. We are here with you every Wednesday night from 7 to 9. And as always, we want you to be a part of the show. The way that you do that, you call us at 855-915-WMFO. That's 855-915-9636. And of course, it's time for Did You Hear, that part of the show where Derek and I quiz each other by asking, you know, maybe a name, topic, and we have to give what the story from this week's news was about. Very competitive. We like to stump each other. Sometimes Derek throws me softballs, which aren't really softballs, but let's see what we got this week. We had a week off, so you ready?
Yeah, I'm always, you don't even have to ask. I do this in my sleep.
Judge Judy.
Judge Judy Shinlin is the top paid reality star. according to a survey conducted by the Hollywood Reporter or Variety.
Variety.
It was Variety, actually. She makes somewhere between $24 and $26 million a year.
Nice paycheck.
Over on the entertainment side.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. $47 million she makes. $47 million.
I thought I saw her at 24 to 26.
She's at 20. Or if we're looking at the reality, she's at 47. Matt Lauer's at 25. Ellen DeGeneres 20. Bill O'Reilly 18 million.
Meanwhile, over on the entertainment side, the three stars of The Big Bang Theory are pulling down $1 million an episode. Yikes!
A million bucks an episode. Yeah, if you want to be shocked, go look.
That's Judy Shinlin money that they're making.
This list of payouts, and I was really surprised how many top-rated primetime shows only pay their stars. You know, maybe I say only, but around like $200,000 an episode. Whereas you look at some of these, all three actors in The Big Bang Theory. $1 million. Drama, Lauren Graham, 750 1,000. Alexis Bledel, 750. So they're both from Gilmore Girls. Kevin Spacey, 500,000 for Netflix, House of Cards. So, yeah, they're paying pretty handsomely over on the Netflix.
Yeah. I didn't dig too deep into the drive. I did see. But the thing with Judge Judy is that she's the executive producer of that show. Mm-hmm. She owns the production company. I think she's got she's got a piece of the distribution. It's like there have been stories written about her savvy with the way that she manages the business side of that show, and that she, by a huge margin, makes more money than anybody else in television. So I thought it was, but you're saying it's 46 million.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
47.
Because I saw all the 20s under her, and I was like, oh, she's 26 to 27.
Mm, 47.
Lauer is overpaid. I think we can agree on that. Lauer is way, way, way overpaid.
Yeah.
Way overpaid. Chorizo.
Chorizo is a Portuguese sausage.
Yes, it is.
I don't know.
This was yesterday. This is a food story. You should be all over this.
I know. Chorizo.
So one of our favorite regular topics on this program.
Chorizo. I have no idea.
Chorizo is the lady introduced nationwide yesterday at a Chipotle restaurant near you. In their latest attempt to get you to come back. Come back, says Chipotle. Please.
Is it? Yeah.
Please come back.
Antivirus.
We have.
They stick that in the sausages.
We have tasty, tasty chorizo now that you can get in your bowls, burritos, and tacos. Chipotle same-store sales, by the way, fell 30% in the first quarter and 26.5% in the second quarter. I believe that's on a year-over-year basis.
All those promotions haven't worked.
Chiptopia loyalty program cut their year-over-year losses from 30% to 26.5%. So that's not bad. 3.5 million people took part in that. So there's your, I guess they got a buck each out of those people, and that kept the sales from going down. They're also, by the way, running ads before the movies, because I saw one the other day where they're talking about how they treat their vegetables like royalty. And at the end of this commercial, I said, okay, when do they put the Listeria in there?
Yes, that comes with it. It comes with the new chorizo.
Yeah.
Flint, Michigan.
Couple of things. Flint, Michigan. And the one that immediately comes to my mind.
This is big news on Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Or yesterday.
Okay. So that's not the Senate Appropriations Bill.
No.
That was held up because they did not include Flint, Michigan funding.
Mm-mm.
Flint, Michigan Tuesday. I saw something out of the corner of my eye. I could not tell you what it was.
So, of course, a city dealing with a serious water contamination program.
Clowns? Have they got clowns?
No, they're also dealing with an outbreak of an infectious disease. The disease is called, I might screw this up, Shigellosis, S-H-I-G-E-L-O-O-S-I-S.
Yeah, you got it, Shigellosis.
Yeah, and it causes fever and stomach pains. There have been, I think, 20-plus reported cases just in the city right now, and it is growing. Whether it has any, you know, connection to the lead problem in the water, who knows? I'm sure we understand that with lead contaminating into the water, it does hurt the immune system. People having a lower immune system, having an outbreak of an infectious disease, not good.
No. I'd just say leave. Can we just, like, pay to move everybody out of Flint, mow it down, and start over?
They should.
Use it to test some nuclear weapons, maybe. I don't know. It just keeps getting worse out there.
The government doesn't want to give them any money.
I know.
That's nice.
That was ridiculous that they almost shut down the government because people wouldn't give money to Flint. Give money to Flint. Okay? I don't care if you give money to anything else in this country. Give money to Flint. Give money to get rid of Zika.
And we're good.
Once you've done those two things, fund or defund anything you want. We can argue about it all day long, but the Zika people and the Flint people need our help right now. Not the Zika people, but the places with the Zika. Mall of America. This was today. All the major networks.
Mall of America.
Mall of America. It's out there in Bloomfield, Minnesota.
Yeah, I know where it is. Are they shutting down?
Yes.
A bunch of stores.
No.
They're shutting down.
Yes.
The amusement park.
No.
Inside of it.
No.
They're shutting down something. I know I've read this. Oh. What are they shutting down, Derek?
They are shutting down the mall on Black Friday. Or actually, oh, they're shutting down the mall on Thanksgiving Day.
I saw the headline really, really quick.
I think
that's when I was scrolling.
Yeah, in another shot against Thanksgiving commercialism. The Mall of America.
Thank God. Good for them.
The Mall of America itself will be closed on Thanksgiving. It will not reopen until 5 a.m. on Black Friday. All of its 1,200 employees have the day off. Those are people who work at the amusement park. Those are the people who clean up the trash, the people who work at the kiosks, all that sort of stuff. They have given the stores the ability to open if they want to. I don't know who's going to be providing security or cleaning the restrooms while this goes on, but they've said, yeah, you can open the stores, but the mall itself will be closed. And I think their hope is that by having a dark, empty mall, that will discourage the shoppers from coming. Of course, there's always going to be somebody. But
that corporate greed, there are going to be a couple stores that will be opening.
But it's interesting because we're gearing up for our annual Black Friday show, mm-hmm. Which will happen on Thanksgiving Eve. It's a tradition around here.
Any listeners that have, you know, listened over the years, it's a big show for us. And we do a crossover show with the show before us, Chris Earl, Time Travel. And we bring in our friends and significant others to just talk about deals, shopping and food. And
we've sort of lamented the decline of Black Friday over the last couple of years. And this is a big one. This is the largest shopping mall in America saying, we're not doing it anymore.
Again, good for them.
So, you know, maybe the retailers will back off a little bit this year. We'll see what happens in a few weeks. Thanksgiving Eve, join us, and we'll have all the answers.
Colombia.
The people of Colombia disappointed me profoundly. In a vote on Sunday, they said no to peace with the FARC rebels. I believe 50.22% versus 48.88%. Or 78?
Yeah. It was 50.2% and 49.8%.
Yeah. So by the narrowest possible margins, they voted against ending the 52-year-old war. Those who voted against it, the Vote No movement was spearheaded by the former president of Colombia. Mm-hmm. Those who voted against it said they were unhappy with the idea that the FARC rebels would not be thrown in jail for their crimes. That was one of the charges. They also didn't like the idea that the FARC rebels would be guaranteed 10 seats in the Congress. So the president of Colombia, Juan Manuel Santos, has not given up on the peace deal. He is still meeting with the rebel leaders, and they're still going to try and figure out a way to move forward with this thing.
Yeah, that's essentially his plan B. I mean, he said that they're going to have negotiators back at the table. You know, Colombians loathe FARC, and, U.S. considers it a terrorist group to some means.
Yeah.
And many considered the accord as an insult to the victims of the conflict.
220,000 people killed. This is a 52-year war. I can understand people wanting the rebels to pay. But isn't...
At what cost?
Isn't peace more important? Isn't ending the war more important than getting your revenge? You know... Yeah, are there some bad actors out there that probably deserve to be executed in horrible ways for what they've done? Yeah, there probably are. But could we stop the war first? And if you're the rebels in this situation, of course you're going to ask for immunity. Of course that's going to be your opening negotiating tactic. That's what everybody does. And that's how part of the reason how the troubles in Ireland came to an end was... The Irish Republican Army basically successfully argued if people aren't in jail right now and they aren't under investigation, no more prosecutions.
Mm-hmm.
And the British government said, we don't want that. We don't like that. But if that's what it's going to take to get you to the table and end this, then we're going to have to live with it. And it's a similar... The difference in Colombia is that Colombia is a little bit more split in its support and opposition to the rebels. The rebels do control a large part of the country, and they do have a fair amount of popular support. I would like to see this end peacefully. You know, I was very happy when I was able to say a war ended
Again, 50.2 to 49.8.
I was very happy to say that a war ended on our Facebook feed. That's facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. You get one great news story every day. Go check it out. facebook.com/bigpicturewmfo. And then the voters come in and ruin everything.
Always.
You know what? Voting is just a mistake. I mean, we got to end voting. Democracy, what's it done for me lately? Let's see. No, we did that one. No, I had one here. Did we have the same? No. No, I can't. No, I'm scrolling. I can't find the one I'm looking for. Karl Lagerfeld.
Oh, I know this. Karl Lagerfeld threw some shade over to Kim Kardashian.
Threw a little more than shade.
He doesn't understand Kim Kardashian was held up in a Paris hotel. And he basically blamed her for getting robbed. Just because, why would you show pictures of yourself with millions of dollars worth of jewelry on your Instagram and your Facebook and Twitter feeds? So he basically said you did it to yourself.
Lagerfeld, who is the design director for Chanel these days, said, quote, "She is too public. We have to see in what time we live." I love this quote. This may be the quote of the year. "You cannot display your wealth, then be surprised that some people want to share it." Brilliant.
Great.
Brilliant, understated,
but
wonderful.
There's been a lot of controversy.
Karl Lagerfeld, awesome.
A lot of controversy going on in saying, how does somebody that never, ever has a moment without some sort of television camera on her, whether she's filming something, somebody in the family, or for her show, conveniently, there's no security footage of anybody going near the room. There's no security footage of anybody going into the elevator that
she's staying. Well, the hotel that she's staying in, $16,000 a night, by
it's
the way.
Very,
the hotel
very
that she's staying in exists exactly for that reason. Nobody knows where it is. Nobody knows who's coming and going. There's no cameras. It's complete anonymity, complete privacy when you're in there. We got one guy at the door. Well, the one guy at the door, when the five guys in ski masks dressed as cops show up, apparently ran away. Kim's bodyguard was out following her sisters, who were out doing other things in Paris that night. There is a good bit of speculation that this is an inside job. That somebody knew she was going to be alone. Somebody knew what was going on in the hotel. We're talking $14 million, which is good. By the time you cut up that stone and melt things down and fence it, you're probably still looking at a payout of, you know, $500,000 for everybody who's involved here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a good opportunity for somebody to share the wealth. You know, the reality is you shouldn't be out traveling and sitting in a hotel by yourself with millions of dollars worth of jewelry.
One would think.
Shouldn't be doing it.
But no, you got to get those likes on Instagram.
The one that I love is you got these idiots over on the progressive left who are like, how dare you blame the victim for the crime? I'm sorry, but if you're walking around with $4 million on your finger.
Yeah, this isn't like, you know, blaming a girl for wearing a short skirt for getting raped. This is a little bit different.
But that's the mentality.
Yeah.
That's the mentality. Or, oh, you're going to say she was asking for it? Yes, I am going to say that Kourtney Kardashian waving a $4 million ring around
just
in Paris.
Like if you were in, you know, the streets of downtown New York and you're just, you know, letting your arm go with your Louis bag hanging out, you know, you clutch it close to your body.
And then you go back to the hotel with no cameras and no security. Yeah, you're kind of asking to be a crime victim. It's sad that it happened. You know, I feel bad for her. But at the same time, wasn't her husband just declaring bankruptcy like a couple of months ago? And she's got $14 million worth of jewelry?
Hey,
Kanye, how about have your wife sell some of that stuff? Mm-hmm. Pay your bills.
Yeah. They're going to need some more promotional shows. Kris Jenner is going to have to turn to a man. It's going to be a whole thing.
Oh, there's the other theory that this whole thing was staged.
Which wouldn't be out of the realm of their normalcy.
Or that it was elaborate insurance fraud or something. You know, there's a lot of theories going on out there. The most plausible explanation is that a group of professional thieves realized the kind of jewelry she was walking around with, knew where she was staying, paid off the doorman, got in, because there's no other reason why you send five people in.
Mm-hmm.
You send five people in to make sure that she doesn't get hurt, that she's not going to look at the situation and say, oh, I can attack that guy and get out of here. That is the same tactic that our SWAT teams use to take down an individual. The more cops we have, the less risk this person is to harming an individual. So this was a pro job, up and down. The whole way they carried it out, they knew what they were looking for. They knew when to go in. They knew nobody was around. Inside job.
Ben Stiller.
Ben Stiller? Really?
Mm-hmm.
Is he one of the highest paid performers in the thing?
No.
Ben Stiller?
Mm-hmm. It's a big piece that came out yesterday.
No, there wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
No, because I heard nothing about Ben Stiller yesterday.
He came out with a powerful essay. It was published in Medium, but many news outlets took the story. So he was diagnosed with prostate cancer 2 years ago. So he's now in remission. And basically, he is now really promoting for people to go before, or for men to go get checked for prostate cancer before age 50. Because his biggest point was saying, at the point of what stage he was for cancer, if he had waited till when he was 50, it would have been full blown and he would have been dead.
Hmm.
So,
good advice. Good advice from, didn't see that one yesterday. Harold Thomas Martin.
He is the government contractor that just got charged today. Actually, he was arrested secretly. We just found out his name today. He was arrested in August, but he was charged with taking classified information from the government. So he stole sensitive documents and other digital files.
Specifically, he stole the code written by the U.S. government to hack foreign governments. Purportedly, countries like China and Russia, practically, probably our European friends as well, which is part of the reason that Europe is, once again, rather annoyed and irritated with the United States.
So he is following in the footsteps of Mr. Snowden.
And making all sorts of diplomatic noises. It should be pointed out that Harold Thomas Martin was a private contractor, like Edward Snowden, and that he worked for Booz Allen Hamilton, the same company that employed Edward Snowden. I think the Booz Hamilton people need to do slightly better background checks on the folks they're hiring. By the way, saw Snowden over the weekend. Recommended.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's if you listen to the show, I don't think you're going to find any great revelations there. We've pretty much broken down, you know, who Snowden really was and what was really going on here. There isn't anything terribly illuminating in this story, but it does give you some good background on who the players are, what they were doing, what our government was up to, maybe a little bit more than you might have read.
And that's in theaters right now.
Oliver Stone, Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays Snowden. Is awesome. It's actually really good.
He's a great actor.
Film that could have some Oscar buzz going around it at the end of the year. A lot of good stuff coming up, so we'll see what happens. But if you're interested in having a better grasp of what's happening with the NSA, with the spying on the American people, it's a good film to see.
Check it out.
855-915-9636 is the telephone number. It is the big picture. When we come back, globalism. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it the reason why American manufacturing jobs are in rapid decline? The answers may surprise you, and we will have them right here, right after this, on WMFO Medford.
Yeah. this is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
In life for free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money.
Welcome back to The Big Picture. He's Derek Gary and I'm Lisa Nichols here with you every Wednesday night, and you can call us at 855-915-9636. And policymaking elites all coming together and converging on Washington this week for meetings that basically hold the faith of globalization and all the monies around the world. With, of course, there is this growing backlash amidst all the talking, whether you believe it is Brexit, whether you believe it is Trump and the U.S. elections and what is harming the global markets. Everybody has their own opinion. So we were kind of talking about the buzzword globalization. That's, is it good or bad, earlier in the show? And really, this is what it comes down to.
They're taking our jobs!
And
jobs!
There's a really great article. Bloomberg put it out, and they have many charts on it, and if you actually look at these charts, it's a little disturbing in how they did it. The IMF put it out. Essentially what the IMF does, it was created years ago to basically make up of a group of economists and strategists and people that know all about money to tell all the countries that are involved in this, United States being one, on how you keep yourselves afloat.
Peace through shared financial interests,
yes,
is one way of looking at this. It was also the underpinning of the World Bank and the underpinning of the European Union. This belief that came at the end of World War II, that if we have enhanced economic cooperation between nations, we will reduce the likelihood of warfare between nations.
But this also involved dealing with trade between each country. In an interesting point in the article, and I brought up Brexit or Trump, and everybody has their reasoning why money has gone down so much in every single country, is this mentality of nationalism. And I think Brexit is a perfect example of that, because Britain got to a point where they realized that the government wasn't giving them what they deserved, the money that they were putting in, the money that they were putting in for taxes. So this is how Brexit came about. The people voted to come away from the United Kingdom. This is also the message, though, that Trump is pushing, I believe, this nationalism and that we only care about us. The IMF is saying not a good thing to have every country only caring about themselves and not as a whole, everybody as a whole, entire coming together.
The problem that we run up against, and the reason that Brexit passed, as we noted at the time, was that people who hadn't voted since the Thatcher years came out in large numbers to vote and universally voted to get out of the European Union. We've also seen some activity here in the United States. Hillary Clinton, interestingly, has pulled out of Ohio and has basically said, I am ceding Ohio to Donald Trump. Because her globalist message is not resonating well with unemployed American middle-class workers who are wondering where all of the manufacturing jobs have gone. The manufacturing sector and employees in that sector have a legitimate axe to grind. Manufacturing has shrunk from 13% of the U.S. job force, total jobs in the United States, 13% in 2000 to 8%. In 2016, manufacturing reached its peak around 1977 at about 27% of the U.S. workforce and 27% of non-farm jobs in the United States. So from 1977 to 2000, 23 years, it was cut by half. And then it's been cut by a little less than half since then. Continues to decline. Why is this happening? Well, the boogeyman that everybody points to is globalism, okay? Donald Trump likes to keep bringing up NAFTA and saying NAFTA is the reason for this. UKIP in the United Kingdom, a party, the UK Independence Party, which was founded for the specific goal of breaking up the European Union by nationalists who didn't particularly like the idea that foreign people could just come into England and get jobs. Very isolationist, very protectionist, basically blaming the loss of those manufacturing jobs on all these people who came in. The reality is that a lot of the jobs that were lost, particularly in British steel and in shipbuilding, have simply disappeared.
But again, if you're looking at the global scheme or across many, many countries, the problem that you're having is that the percentage of that 1% that is at the top, it is getting smaller and smaller up there, and they are controlling more and more of the money, not just here in the United States, but in many of these other countries.
Well, they're profiting off of the business no matter where it happens. Yes. And they're profiting off the economy no matter where it happens because they have the ability to do that. So we need to address ourselves to two fundamental questions. Question number one, which I will ask Lisa Nichols, is globalism evil?
No.
Is globalism bad?
No.
Really? Because there's a lot of people in the Midwest that are going to disagree with you on that point.
I guess it's...
They work for Ford, they work for Carrier.
My only point, I guess it's almost like a libertarian stance where I believe that we here in the United States should have open and free trade. There should be that back and forth. I don't think that we should be completely on our own or relying on ourselves. But then again, do I agree that we should keep as many jobs as possible here in the United States? I think there's a give and take with it.
Globalism in and of itself is not good, bad, evil, good, and any of those things. It is a...
That's what I'm saying. You can't just say it's a black and white.
It is an economic system in the same way that capitalism is an economic system. It is a way of visualizing the movement of goods. And in the case of globalism, it is a way of visualizing and establishing trade between nations instead of visualizing and establishing trade between towns. Okay? The United States... If you think about this country, actually exists because of a type of globalism where we have free trade between our states. Mm-hmm. And we don't sit here and say, well, oh, my God, you know, all the jobs in Montana went down to South Dakota. So we got to get rid of South Dakota.
No, we look at the United States as a complete whole.
We need to put a wall up around Ohio so we don't have any more people from Indiana coming in here and taking our jobs. Mm-hmm. Nobody in this country is going to say that because that's crazy talk. But when we get into the international side of things, this is where it gets interesting. I said the answer here was surprising. NAFTA gets blamed for all of this job loss in the United States. NAFTA became the rule of the land in 1993. And there were about 1.8 million U.S. jobs that disappeared after NAFTA. That was it. We're 7 years. 1.8 million jobs were lost. We're talking about a net loss right now, by the way, of about 5 million manufacturing jobs since the year 2000.
But again, okay? You can't look solely at, or you can't blame NAFTA. Again, as we pointed out, it's companies like Ford that are moving all manufacturing to places like Mexico.
But let me back this up, okay? Because I started out with the premise that, you know, saying globalism is bad is like people in Ohio saying we're going to build a wall to keep out India. The reason it works in the United States is because we have Congress and we have the interstate trade rules, which basically say, within certain limits, you have to compete on equal footing. So you can, as a state, you can say, we're going to give tax subsidies if you incorporate here. Mm-hmm. Or you can say, we have no income tax, so your employees will be happier here. What you can't do is say, our minimum wage is $1 an hour, because that is unfair. So we have a federally set minimum wage.
Just like we gave, the Commonwealth gave Raytheon to come back here to Massachusetts.
Correct.
We are giving them tax breaks.
There are no federal tax benefits to working in one state versus another. Mm-hmm. There are state tax benefits in some cases that states use to lure business all the time. But for the most part, most businessmen are going to look at a situation and come up with somewhere between a 5% and a 15% cost difference between setting up a business in one state versus another. Equal footing. Fair. Once NAFTA came into play, it was the same thing. It was equal footing, fair. No tariffs, no trade differences, similar tax systems. Everything's fine. So NAFTA is not our problem. And NAFTA is globalism. Trade with China, or trade with Canada and Mexico. I'm blowing the punchline already. Trade with Canada and Mexico is globalism. And it, yes, we lost some manufacturing jobs as a result of it. But that's not the big problem. The big problem happened sometime around the year 2001. That's when there was a massive decline in U.S. manufacturing jobs. What happened? Well, in the year 2000, the United States, I think this was the year 2000, 2000 or 2001, the United States granted permanent trade partner status to China. 1.8 million manufacturing jobs were lost the next year.
Just in 1 year.
And manufacturing jobs have continued to decline at an abrupt pace ever since. The problem is not globalism. The problem is China. Now, we go back to this example of the United States. New Mexico says, we're going to pay people $1 an hour. And no corporate taxes. Mm-hmm. Every corporation in America is going to move into New Mexico.
But can't you use the argument...
This is what China is doing.
Can't you use the argument, though, that regardless, the big player in this is China. But everything else adds up altogether. So when I say and bring up the topic of moving Ford, or Ford moving to Mexico, and then lying to the American people and saying we're not going to lose any manufacturing jobs, when so many companies do all of that, move to other places other than China, and that's going to add up. I mean, it's not just one sole thing. The biggest player definitely is what you're just saying. I mean, you can look at the numbers. As you said, 1.8 million has been declining furiously through the next couple years.
That's not NAFTA, by the way. That is preferred trade partner status granted to China by the Bush administration.
I was just going to say that came from the Bush.
That would be George Bush the Younger, mm-hmm. who was responsible for that. And there go your man. When we talk about the shrinking middle class in this country, we're talking about manufacturing jobs. Mm-hmm. Because manufacturing jobs, on average, paid right at the average of the American national salary. The national median income was about the same as what manufacturing jobs paid. Hourly, you're looking at about $20 an hour, which is better than you're doing in a lot of industries. Those are the jobs that are disappearing. Why? Because I can go to Mexico, and the labor there is $8.75 an hour. And Wall Street wants me to go to Mexico because Wall Street doesn't think I'm making enough in profits.
Now, if we're looking on the bigger scale, and talking about other countries globally, not just here in the United States. What effect does China have on them? Do they have same partnerships that are going on?
Same thing.
When Trump comes out and says, basically, China does have, you know, the upper hand on every single country, he's not incorrect.
Europe as a whole has taken a much more protectionist stance with China than the United States has.
Which is interesting, though, because they're in more financial difficulties than we are.
Yeah, but Europe...
to a point.
Europe is also... They talk about the European Union and how great that is. Every one of those countries is defiantly nationalist. And we've been seeing this in the last year.
Absolutely.
People have thrown walls up, and people have tried to shuttle immigrants from one country to another. And the EU Commission sits around and says, that's not European. And the Belgians thumb their nose at them, and the Austrians thumb their nose at them.
It's so funny that the European Union paints themselves as this unified, you know, glorified group of countries, and they're really not.
As
you just said,
as long as it works for me, that's the attitude of each of these European countries.
So basically, every single country in the European Union is acting like a millennial.
Trade with China does not work for Europe, and Europe gets this. So Europe places huge tariffs on Chinese goods. China has a tougher time getting into the European marketplace, because their products are priced competitively, and Europeans, given a choice between a European-made product and a Chinese-made product at the same price, will choose the European product. It's the exact opposite in the United States,
so
where China comes in
is,
and everything's a buck.
Is that the only way that we are going to fix that? Are we going to get to a point where we need to now start raising tariffs, which has been brought up in this presidential election?
This is
from clearly one side, and that people don't want to admit to it, and they don't think that he has a clear plan. He does. He talked about raising tariffs on countries like China. It's not so crazy talk anymore.
It is, because the thing about it is punitive in small ways, and it is likely to set off a trade war. Because if the United States raises tariffs on Mexico...
Well, we can't raise it too high, or we're going to lose money.
Well, he's talking about big... He's talking about... He specifically said, I think, 15% on everything coming out of Mexico. If you raise tariffs on the imports, all you're going to do is get Mexico and China to do the same thing to us.
Mm-hmm.
And then our exports fall even further. There is a certain point where need kicks in. But there's a lot of damage that you can do around the edges of that.
No, essentially, we can't sell our products, and our products that are coming in are at dramatically increased prices.
A stronger weapon that Donald Trump may have, or that any politician may have, which hasn't been discussed because Wall Street really doesn't like this idea, is that you would charge a different corporate tax rate for profits made on items imported into the United States versus items made in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a way to punish these companies for outsourcing jobs.
So it's basically a situation where, fine, you want to move to whatever country. If you want to bring your product back into the country, then you are going to be having these tariffs
Ford, every car that you make in the United States, your corporate tax rate on those profits is 15%. Every car you make in Mexico, your corporate tax rate is 40%. And there is a break-even point there where that would work. It doesn't work because greed rules the day. Wall Street rules the day. Wall Street doesn't want it. Really, when you look at what Trump is proposing, it is not the right solution. Voters gravitate toward him because he's at least talking about it. Hillary Clinton wants all of this conversation to go away, because Hillary Clinton is...
she has no plan for it.
She's fine with globalism. But the truth is, Donald Trump is fine with globalism too. And the promises that he is making about, I'm going to throw in these huge tariffs, we're going to make China pay, maybe.
So then
practically, do you want to believe that? Practically, do you think he is going to hold to that in the face of what the Chinese are likely to do to the U.S. economy if we take any sort of an economic stand against them?
So we kind of are
unproven leader. We don't know.
Essentially, we're under their foot.
We're not under their foot, but it takes...
I mean, it's to a point, because what you're telling me is that we can't raise tariffs too high, because then they're going to do the same thing back to us, but they have control of the whole entire market. We understand how much control they have over in Southeast Asia and everywhere surrounding in that, also with Europe, but especially with us.
Trade works in the United States because we have the federal government overseeing the relationship. This is what is missing in globalism right now. This is how China gets away with everything that it gets away with. There is no international body that is sitting there saying, China, you can't do that. And when someone does say it, there's a thing that's going on with the islands where China said, nope, we don't recognize your authority. There's been all kinds of copyright claims filed against China where China says, we don't recognize your authority. Until you have a global body that has some teeth and the ability to impose meaningful sanctions against China, China continues to compete unfairly. And among the things that it does, tax-free operations for U.S. businesses. It builds factories for U.S. businesses. It stole the solar panel. It stole all of our solar technology, commoditized the panels, and shut us out of what could have been a major driver of economic growth for the next 100 years. China stole that business from us. China subsidizes its companies. Now, I happen to believe that no government, under any circumstances, should subsidize the salaries of full-time workers. China does this. Why? Because it allows it to grow at 10% annually. It allows it to be competitive. It allows it to be a darling of Wall Street. China is competing unfairly. There is no one to check that power. Neither Donald Trump nor Hillary Clinton are going to be in a position to do that, no matter what they say, on their own.
So I ask you, what is the solution?
The solution is you need the United States, Canada, Mexico, Japan, the European Union, Australia, every African nation, everybody in the world to come together and say, these are the rules. We are going to enforce these wages across all nations. Mm-hmm. We are going to enforce this tax rate across all nations. We are going to enforce these currency rules across all nations. We are going to eliminate government subsidies for private businesses across all nations. If everyone competes fairly, everyone shares in the wealth. Wall Street doesn't like it because Wall Street doesn't get to play winners and losers in that situation. Place their big leveraged bets and make 100, 200, 300% profits on them.
But as I do with so many things that sound perfect in this, you know, great scheme of things, it will never happen.
There is a way to make globalism work. We have proven it works in the United States. The United States is a functioning example of globalism. Think of all the different states. Think about that one central regulatory body that keeps everything fair. Mm-hmm. Are some states a little richer than others? Yes. But for the most part, what's happened in this country is the states have specialized according to what they do best. You find a mix of economic sectors in every state, but there are timber states, there are farm states, we're a technology and learning state. California is the big Hollywood state. That's where globalism functions at its best. The United States, we are globalism at work. But the key is to make it work fairly. And right now, from what I see, neither presidential candidate has a plan to do that. 855-915-9636. On the Tell Mikey D, everything you need to know about the Boston music scene is coming up in just a few minutes. But before that, our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things from the past week right here on WMFO Medford.
Yeah. I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne. For many years, you know I've had a drink problem and I'm trying to battle that problem every single day. But one thing I don't do, I don't drive my car when I'm drinking. I get someone to drive me. Do not drink and drive. It's the stupidest thing. If you drink, just don't drive. Not only are you going to hurt yourself, you may hurt some other person, and you wouldn't want that on your conscience, would you?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we're living our dream.
WMFO Medford, I'm Lisa Nichols with Derek Gary, and this is The Big Picture. It's time for What's Hot, our favorite thing from this week. Now, we didn't have a show last week, so I went to one of my favorite cities with my boyfriend to Portland. And I've told you all the different places that I've been to, Derek, and I've talked about it on the show. We discovered a new place. It's actually in Thompson's Point in Portland, right next to one of my favorite up there, Bissell Brothers. It's called Cellar Door Winery, and they produce all their own wine, but you stumble upon it, and for $8, they do a full wine tasting. So we just happened to see the door, and they were like, you want to do a wine tasting? Of course we do. Definitely check them out. The space is unbelievable. It's beautiful. They bring in a lot of local vendors, chocolatiers, specialty products. So it's a great kind of like one-stop shop. And again, if you're not too much into the wine, go next door to Bissell Brothers. That is putting out, I think, some of the best IPAs in Maine.
So who is this doing this?
Cellar Door. It's in Thompson's Point. And Thompson's Point is right next to the Amtrak. So if you do take the train up there, you're right there. You're opening the door, and you're at the brewery. You're at the winery.
Nice. Get off the train. Pretty go cool. To Thompson's Point. Get your wine. Topsfield Fair is going to be running for another week. Nice. It ends on Monday. Go, 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 go. The biggest pumpkin ever, Lisa. They have the biggest pumpkin.
Ever in history?
Not ever in history. There's a guy in Germany that grew one bigger. But the biggest pumpkin in United States history is on display up there. This bad boy weighs 2,075 and a half pounds. And it was grown by Steve Connolly of Sharon, who has taken top honors in this several times before and was the first person to bring a pumpkin weighing more than 1,000 pounds to the Topsfield Fair.
Half done.
In addition to that, they got a really huge rooster, which is very cool. It's like the biggest rooster I've ever seen. I love the poultry exhibit in there. All the usual plants, flowers, vegetables, wacky food. They got a half-decent little roller coaster up there this year. So, Topsfield Fair.
I have to ask you, you went on the weekend. How was the traffic?
Well, we went on Sunday, and because of the rain, nobody was really up for going to it. So, it was probably the calmest I've ever seen it up there.
Really?
This weekend, with the weather expected to be better. Yeah. Leave early, because Saturday and Sunday are going to be nuts. But it's going through Monday. $15 parking. Admission is cheap. Take the family. Have a great time.
As we end the show every week, that's the thing that happened, the craziest story from this week's news. This is dedicated to Derek. A Florida man's decision to throw out his 19-year-old son's Lego collection Tuesday night triggered a domestic brawl that ended in both combatants behind bars, police report. Responding to a 11 p.m. domestic violence call at the Port Lucy residence, cops encountered Nicholas Melice Sr. and his son Nicholas Jr. The elder Melice, 46, had been arguing with his sons. Cop noted, quote, over Mr. Melice's senior throwing out his son's Legos. The dispute that both involved acknowledged turned physical and included the exchange of shoves and punches. Each man suffered scratches during the fight. The younger Melice apparently discovered that his Legos had been trashed upon returning to his family home at his after his current residence in Jupiter. And both were charged and booked in county jail early Wednesday morning with misdemeanor battery. So, Derek, if you have a son, don't throw out his Legos.
Never touch another man's Lego. California. Forrest Brantley, 35, broke into the gift shop of a Spanish mission early Thursday, that's last week, and stole a pair of crucifixes. He then attempted to rob a victim of their phone in the mission's parking lot. When they refused to give Brantley the phone, he hit them with one of the crucifixes. Brantley then began walking down Ventura's Main Street and did the same thing to two more victims, striking them with the crucifix. He subsequently